is Lisa Withers. It is November the 18th, 2020. I am at Deluxe Barbershop in Durham, North Carolina with Mr. Derek Green, the current owner of the establishment. We are here today to talk about the history of the barbershop as well as its founder, Mr. Sterling Holt. And so before we get started, Mr. Green, may I have permission to record this interview with you?
Yes, ma'am, you do.
Thank you so much, and thank you for joining with me today. I'd like to start the interview by asking a little bit about yourself. Are you from Durham?
I am. I'm from Durham. I'm from, actually, every neighborhood in Durham. Born and raised. I graduated from Durham High School in 1988. I went to college at the Art Institute of Atlanta in 1988. Graduated in 1990 in Atlanta. Then I attended the American College for Applied Arts in Atlanta, graduated in 1992. And then I started cutting hair because I couldn't afford a haircut while I was in college. So then I went to barber school.
Was barber school also in Atlanta?
No, I went to barber school in Maryland, actually. And I ended up coming back home to North Carolina, and I started working with Sterling Holt.
So what was that moment that led you to being introduced to Mr. Holt?
Well, actually, he has one son. He's a junior, Sterling Holt Jr. I was in barber school because I had gotten my barber licenses in Maryland, and Maryland not being a reciprocity state, when I came home, I had to go to barber school again. So while I was in school, I was at a convenience store as a part-time job, and I happened to walk in the store, and I had my barber school smock on, and it had the name of the barber school and everything, and a young man walked up to me. He was a young man, and he asked me, was I from Durham? And I said, yes, sir, how did you know that? He said, because you look familiar to me. And I said, wow. He said, well, my father is getting older. He has a barbershop in Durham, and I would like to know, would you please come work with him when you finish school so someone could be there with him? At the time, Mr. Holt, Sterling Holt Sr. was 88 years old. So when I came by to meet Mr. Holt Sr., he recognized me, although I had never met him. Turns out that he was a godfather to my father. His wife and my father's mother, which is my grandmother, had a daycare in the basement of this particular building. So he was godfather to my father, and his son eventually, or essentially, became a godfather to me. But for him to recognize, I guess because I looked so much like my father, he thought he knew me. So when he invited me to come visit with his father and maybe possibly be here with him, I had started already working at a barbershop because I was on my way out of barber school already. And so while I was working at the barbershop previous to this one, I said, well, let me go meet Mr. Holt because he don't know that I'm coming. I already had, committed to coming to work with him. So I came to meet him one day, and I told him, he asked me, Mr. Holt Sr., he was sitting here at the time, like I said, he was about 88, and he would come late in the evening. The shop would be closed all day, and he would come to work at 6 o'clock in the evening, and he would work till 9 o'clock at night. And I'm thinking, well, that's kind of late for him to be there by himself. So I came to meet him, and he asked me, what were my dreams, what were my plans and everything, and I told him about my journey from coming from Maryland to here, and then he instantly went into my family's connection with him, with my grandmother downstairs, with his wife, Miss Josie. Her name was Josie Holt, J-O-S-I-E. Okay, so, and my grandmother's name was Virginia Austin. My father's name is Ricky Austin. And so he remembered my dad, and he remembered my grandmother. And so I said, well, I want to eventually open my own shop one day and possibly, do a couple of shops here and there. He said, well, son, he said, let me tell you. He said, come here with me. Save your money. Because I had saved up all the money I could. He said, save your money. Come here with me, and I'll take care of you. That was the first day I met him. Matt, mind you, this was April of 2007. Okay. So, I was already working at a barbershop. In the meantime, I had graduated barber school, gotten my licenses in North Carolina, and so I was able to work here. And so after about a year, I was still working at the barbershop where I was working, and I thought about it. I said, well, he's about 89 now. He's getting older. So I came back, and I say, Mr. Hope, what are you thinking about me coming? This was April of 2007. I said, by Thanksgiving of that same year. He said, whatever you want to do is fine. Just come by. And he gave me a key to the barbershop. He said, whenever you're ready, you just come when you're ready. So what I did was at the barbershop I was previously working, I started telling people, all of my clientele, I started letting them know there's going to be a transition, and if you ever come here and I'm not here, this is where I'll be. I had my cards already made up, and I had everything already laid. I had a website, and I had everything. So I said, this is where I'll be. If you ever come and I'm not here, this is where I'll be. So Halloween came around. I said, I'm going to go ahead and go. So I came up here. It was on a Monday afternoon, maybe about 1 o'clock. Where I was working, it was something small that happened, and I didn't agree with it. And that was just, I said, okay, it's time to go. I packed up everything. I came up here. And within 30 minutes, I had 25 people in here. And mind you, the shop would be closed all day until about 6 o'clock when he decided to come to work. So that particular day, he didn't know I was coming. I didn't call him and let him know I was coming that day. Okay. So when he came at 6 o'clock and he seen about 30 people in there, it shook him to his, because he's old school, right? And he wasn't used to that. He say he came in the building, and he always parked his car right in front of the window right here, right? So I seen him, and I had all these chairs full. I got 26 chairs in here. All of them was full, and I had 3 people standing outside in like 4 hours, right, from where I was. And I knew it was going to shake him. I knew it, you know what I mean? And so he came in, and I was in the very end chair. There's 4 chairs in here. I was at the very last chair at the end of the row. This was his chair, the first chair. So when he came in, he came, and he did like Mr. Rogers. He would come in, and he always, always, always wore a certain tie to work every day. His whole career, always wore a certain tie. And that's what we're taught in barber school. We always do that until you get to a point where you think you know. But he always wore a certain tie, pants, slacks, whatever. So he came in, took his jacket off, hung it up. He would adjust the heat. It'd be June, 98 degrees outside. He got the heat on high. There's 40 people in here. This is the very first day I'm here, right? So, okay. He didn't say anything. He pulled out all his equipment, did everything. He said, Derek. And he motioned me to come talk to him. Because he didn't know I was coming that day. He said, I want you to regulate everybody, and I want you to keep your eyes on everybody. And he sat in his chair and went to sleep. That's what he did. This was the very first day. I said, okay, boom. So me being who I am, I said, well, this man is not used to all of this traffic like this. Let me get these people out of here. So I'm grinding, I'm grinding, I'm grinding, I'm grinding. Boom. 2 hours, I got him out of here. So now it's just he and I. So now he want to talk. He say, Derek. He talked real slow because he's relaxed. He's a 90-year-old man almost. He said, Derek. He said, I want you to be comfortable. I want you to do what you got to do. He said, just regulate your company, monitor your company, and every dollar is not a good dollar. And then he went back to sleep. And he left it at that. Okay, this was on a Monday. This was October 29th, 2008. Okay. So, I came back to work on Tuesday. Same thing. I mean, because I've always had a lot of people. And I knew this was going to be different for him. And I know he's old. I know he's already set in his ways. Now, I didn't know him like my father did. So, the first thing I did, the second day I came back, I called my dad. He didn't know I was here, up here with him, right? So, I said, Dad, I said, look, I need you to come up here because I'm working at Mr. Holt's shop. I knew my dad knew him, but you know what I mean? And so, my dad came. And so, he kind of bridged the gap a little bit. You know, it made me feel more, you know, because when they got to talking, I'm listening to the stories that they're telling. You know, he's reminiscing with my dad about my dad's mom working downstairs with his wife, and they going in, and I'm sitting down at the end of the row listening, and I made sure I didn't have no clientele because I want to hear this. This is oatmeal right here. This is going to sustain me, right? So they got to talking and everything, and so I became more and more comfortable. Around this time, I met his son, Sterling Holt Jr. That name is Sterling Michael Holt and Sterling Michael Holt Jr. So Sterling Jr. is his only child. He only has one child. And like I say, his wife was Josie Holt, and she worked with my grandmother downstairs for years. I think they from what I understand, they had the daycare downstairs for like almost 40 years. Right. And so he established the barbershop in 1946. And you're not familiar with Durham, but if you keep straight up the sidewalk here, up the street here, Fayetteville Street, there's a snow cone place right across the highway. Okay, so now I'm going into what he's told me over the years. There was no highway there. This is what they call urban renewal. Back in the, I'm not sure of the year, but I want to say either the mid-60s to the early 70s or whatever. But there was no Highway 147 right there leading into Highway 40. But the barbershop was originally up here. It was called Hayti. Okay, the Hayti area was a, of course, all I'm telling you is before my time even. You know, I was born in 1970, but before they had what they call Black Wall Street. I'm sure you've heard of Black Wall Street. And so all of this highway area was not there. So when they came through and did urban renewal, they brought the highway through, and so he bought two lots right here and built this building, and he built it by hand. Himself, he hired a carpenter, and the carpenter, from what I remember, I think he said the carpenter was his cousin. So he kind of got a deal on the help and the wood and all this kind of. But he bought, it was two houses right here, and so he bought the two houses, tore them down, and to give you a vision of how much of a visionary he was in the 40s. He said one day they're going to come through, because at the time he said the Fairfield Street was a dirt road. This was all a dirt road. Right from here to, actually, Durham was split into two counties where from here, from let's say downtown Durham to Hillside High School was Durham. Well, no, actually, not even to Hillside. To, I would say, probably 100 yards from North Carolina Central, that was the end of the Durham County line. And from there, it was called Pearson Town. And from there to like maybe South Point was like a whole nother end of Durham that wasn't even a part of Durham. Now, these are the stories from Sterling Holt. Okay, so he was such a visionary that He built the building so far. That's why we're so far off the street right now. He said one day they're going to come through and they're going to double these streets up. And you're going to have two lanes, even though it was a dirt road. They were horse and carriage almost, you know, fresh off of that thing. You know what I mean? And so he had the vision to tear down these two houses. He built this building. I guess Urban Renewal probably paid him or something, you know, to be able to relocate or whatever. I'm not sure. I wasn't here. So, from his words now. So, he built the building far enough back from the street. So, if they ever have to widen the street, we would still have enough room to be in this building. Okay. And so, he started, I'm going to go back to his beginning in barbering. Okay. He was born August 23rd, 1919. Okay. He's born in Mebane, North Carolina, which is where I reside today. Ironically, he comes from the lineage of barbering because his father was a barber. Now his father's name was Thomas Holt. And he was the only black barber in Orange County at the time, in the 1800s. And he only serviced in the barber profession, we call them straight hair people, white folk. He was the only black barber that serviced white people. But he was so revered that he was allowed to cut the governor of North Carolina at the time in the 1800s. He had all the senators. He had all the county commissioners. This is Thomas Holt, right? Okay. Right now, if you go to Mebane, there is a street called Holt Street. Holt Jr., Sterling Holt Jr., lives in the house that his father built. His grandfather built right now on the street named for them. And guess what? He owns every house on the street. That's because his grandfather, Thomas Holt, bought every lot on the street to raise his son, Sterling Holt Sr. He had a daughter. Sterling Holt Sr. has a sister who's still living today in Charlotte. She just turned 98. I don't know her name, but Sterling's Holt, and it was just those two. So she and her nephew, which is Sterling Holt Jr., are the only two surviving Holts right now. Okay, so he was born in Mebane. He attended North Carolina College at the time, and the dean of the school was James E. Shepherd. That was the dean of the school at the time. So from there, I'm not sure what he majored. I think he was a business administration major. And then he attended Harris Barber College, which is in Raleigh. Okay. He practiced under Mr. Harris himself, for whom the school is named. And he became Mr. Harris's first barber school instructor. And from there, he became an instructor at, I think it was called the Durham Barber College, or I want to say DeShazer's. You heard of DeShazer's? Okay, DeShazer's, he was the first instructor at both of those. Yeah. Durham Barber College was like in the 60s, 70s, I imagine. And he was still running this barbershop, but at the time he hadn't moved here yet. Well, actually he had moved here already. And so he became an instructor. He attended North Carolina College. He was a member of PHA, Prince Hall Masons. And he worked through the 70s and 80s. And these are all the stories I'm telling you from what I've heard from him. And so, and even, and then my father was, His first haircut was by Sterling Holt. That's when the lineage started coming up. And by that time, my grandmother was already working downstairs because she would bring my father with her to work. He would come up here, get his hair cut, and then he'd come down there with the rest of the children. So that's where all of that became, you know. And then when my father grew up, he cut his hair all his life. And so when he found out that I was my father's son, that's when he opened his arms to me. And then everything came full circle. When I came from Maryland, I went to Harris Barber College. And I finished my stuff there, even though I already had a barber license, but I had to get a North Carolina license. And then when I came here, he was like, "You Ricky's son?" He said, "Don't you spend your money, come here. Don't buy no, come here." So boom. So, and he was feisty. He wasn't no punk. Oh no, oh no. Everybody, when I came here, like I say, the shop would be closed all day. But when I came, and there's a barbershop right next door. So the very first day that I came here, they were so used to the shop being closed all day, they eating real good. So the very first day I came, I tell you, 30 minutes, I had 40 people in there. So every barber next door came over here to see what was going on. And the owner of the shop next door, he said, "Man, who are you?" I said, "Well, I'm Derek Green." He said, "Well, I own the shop." He said, "I want my barber to see how motivated you can be because you ain't been here an hour and you got this whole shop full." He said, "Man, how did you do this right here?" I said, "Good work, public service, communication. It ain't always about the money. You got to give people a good haircut and they'll come see you every time." So when I left where I was at, they followed me where I was going. That's what I told him. And I say, "I got to go back to work. I'll talk to you later. I got to go. I got too many people in here." And he walking and talking to them out the door. He was like, "Man, see y'all there." All of that stuff. Anyway, so Mr. Holt told me, he said, "Look, all money is not good money. Monitor your crowd. Watch everybody. And don't trust everybody." He said, "But always be a public servant. If somebody need a haircut and they don't have no money, give them a haircut because they'll never forget it. Even if they never bring you no money, if you never see them again, you give them a haircut to take with them and that may uplift them to do something else other than whatever they did when they came in there." And I've never forgotten that. To this day, I do just that. Especially people that I've already cut the hair, they paid me. If you can pay me when you got it, you should be able to come see me when you don't have it. Because at one point or another, we'll be able to fix that. You know, and that's one of the lessons that he's always taught me. And then he's always, and he had a real, I'm going to say a good habit, I'm not going to say a bad habit, but he always had a habit of talking because he had so much in his mind. He would talk to me, even though at the time I came in, I was 38 years old. He would talk to me like I was his age. You remember when FDR was the president? Man, that was the best president we ever had. I'm like, "Mr. Holt, wait a minute. Oh, no, FDR, wait a minute. I remember Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan, but I don't remember no FDR." But see, that was just, he was such a scholar at his thinking. And he always stayed focused on his surroundings, what he was thinking about, and he always took his time before he talked. He would never say anything unless he thought about it first. He would say, "Derek," and then it'd take him 8 seconds to say the very next thing out of his mouth. So he would always take his time. He wouldn't say anything until he thought about it first. He would call my name, and I would sit there, and I'm like, and then he would say what he wanted. I'm like, "Man, you could just say that, Derek." And then he would say, "Turn the heat down a little bit. Man, you could, you know." And so that's one of the things that taught me patience. Because, and I think that was a, I ain't gonna say ulterior motive, but I think that was his way of teaching me to, because I'm young, you know, I'm vibrant, I'm trying to get every dollar, and that was his way of showing me how to slow down just a little bit, because you'll miss something if you're moving too fast. If you slow down a little bit, you'll catch everything. And so I started paying attention, and then he would call me about anytime he would not feel like coming to the shop or anything, like he would call me and let me know, Derek, I'm not going to make it up there this evening. Can you leave the heat on for me for tomorrow? Knowing he ain't coming early in the morning, I'm going to be here. I don't need the heat on. But he always kept the mindset that he had an 8-hour schedule every day, even though he wasn't working but 2 hours, and then he wasn't even working that. You know, but it was just, and I'm sitting, I used to sit down at the end of the row, and I would just watch him. When I'm not working or nothing, I would just watch him. Even if he had maybe about 5 clients, and he would actually be cutting hair, but he's not even cutting hair. The clippers is in the air, and he swear out, he cutting some hair on them people's head. And out of respect for him, the people that they would come back the next day, Derek, can you cut my hair? And I never told him that, you know what I mean? But that was just respect that he had from the public. And they knew he was getting older. But I'm going to tell you, his body declined from the 6 years that I worked with him before he decided to retire. His body declined, but his mind never lost a beat. Do you understand me? That was the sharpest non-mobile man I ever seen in my life. It would take him 45 minutes to get to the bathroom and back. He would walk in 3-centimeter steps all the way to the bathroom. And then by the time he'd go in there and come back out. And the funny thing is, I appreciated that. Because I admired that, really. I'm like, boy, I sure hope I get to be like that right now. You know what I mean? I don't want to be no young man and can't do that. I want to be an old man, just like he was being old. That's what you want to be, old. And he was getting to the, doing what his mind telling him to do, but his body just wasn't letting him. And to him, he probably was thinking, I'm wide open. Let me slow down. But he wasn't moving, going nowhere. He couldn't reach that's why I kept everything in this barbershop as original. Except for the chairs over there. The waiting chairs. These barber chairs are from the 40s. These are the original chairs. I never got rid of them, and I never will if I can help it. Never got rid of them. Only thing I did in here was paint the walls, and I hung all my stuff up. But that's why I keep my wall of history, too, though, because he always had a wall of history. But it was his history. And if I had enough time, I would have had some of that for you. But this is all my history. That's why I put him right there, so he can watch over me right here. You understand now? So, his mind never declined, but his body declined. And I was still, and he would sit in his chair, and he would just, anytime we would sit here by ourselves and just sit here, and a lot of times I did it, even after I shut the shop down or whatever, I would just sit here just to see, and he would be asleep. But I would just sit here with him just to see if he'd wake up and just start talking. And he did. He would start talking, and he was like, Derek, you still here? He said, well, you doing good with your children. And at the time, my kids were coming out of middle school and all of this. And like you said, I got my oldest daughter is an attorney now. My younger daughter, she designs rides for Disneyland out in California. And then my son is a computer scientist. And he's seen me grow all of that sitting right there in this chair half asleep, and I'm down at the end of the row. And he said, Derek, you're doing good with your children, and I want you to always be able to take care of your kids. He said, keep doing that. You're doing a great job. And then he would go off into something from the 50s. And I can't relate. I can't do nothing but sit and listen. You know, he said, yeah, that boy got missing over there. He shouldn't have went to that diner. I don't know why he thought them people was going to trust him. And I'm sitting there thinking, who is this dude talking about? He talking about Jimmy Hoffa. He talking about like he know him. He said, well, no, I ain't going to say I know him, but I know some of the stuff he did. And he just going, and I'm like, and it's flabbergasting because it's like he's bringing history through the front door. And I'm sitting there, I'm like watching the movie. I'm like, what in the world? I said, I need to go get me a beer. I need to sit here and watch this right here because this is going to be good. That's the kind of anticipation I had every time he started talking, you know, and he talked about it so candidly yet nonchalantly, you know, like he was there. I mean, he just talking about it and he's spilling it. I'm like, man, you know where Jim at, don't you? That's what I want to ask him. You know where Jim is. Is he at home playing at Yankee Stadium? What did they do? Because that's the way he talked about it. But he talked so decisively. You know what I mean? He talked like, I know what I'm saying. If you don't listen, you're going to miss it. That's why I was so intent on whatever. Anytime he said anything, I hung on every word because I know he ain't lying. That man too old to be lying now. At this time, he's 92 years old, you know. And then, to move fast forward, and he was driving this whole time, right? He was driving. Yeah, he was driving his car. Like I said, he parked his car right in front of the building, right here at the window, right here where his gate is. He would pull the bumper up to the gate. Yeah, he would pull the bumper, because you know, that's when it got scary, because I'm thinking he's coming in the building, you know what I mean? And so when he turned 95, the DMV wouldn't renew his license. That's when he decided to retire. At 95 years old. No, I'm sorry, 93. I don't want to tell the untruth. But he was 93. At the time, I had been here 5 years. That's why I got it twisted. But yeah, he was 93. And it was raining and it was the snow. He didn't, 6 o'clock, I know he coming. And he did. And then at 93, he tried to go get his license renewed, and he and his myself and his son had to call the DMV and tell him, no, don't get that man no more license. Please don't. Please, you know what I mean? We basically had to, and then not only that, his son had to hide his keys because he was still trying to drive. But that's just, that was his routine for 80 years, you know what I mean? And so once they stopped him from driving, he called me because we had a landline at the time. He called me and he said, Derek. I said, yes, sir, Mr. Holt, how can I help you? What's going on? It's 8 o'clock in the morning. He said, there any way you can come by my house? I need to see you. It's important. I said, I'm on my way, right? Because I'm thinking something wrong, you know, because he would do that from time to time when he couldn't get up and go to the bathroom. I would run to his house right now and I'm coming. Boom. So he said, he called me. He said, Derek, I need to see you. It's important. I said, okay, I'm on the way right now. And he lived not far from NCCU down here. And so I went. I had a client in here. I said, dog, I'll be right back. It's an emergency. So I left out and I left him. I trusted him. So I left him in here and I went to his house. I got to his house. He said, Derek, and there wasn't nothing wrong. He just wanted me to come down and to tell me. He said, Derek, I think this is the day. He said, it's over. I'm not coming back. I said, what do you mean? He said, I'm not going to be able to come back. This is the end of the road. He said, I'm going to need you to keep going. I said, well, I'm going to absolutely do that. He said, I'm going to have somebody call you. Long story short, he had a lawyer call me. That's when he said, well, you're going to take over this barbershop, such and such and such and all of that. I said, well, I would be more than happy to be there, and be, like I told you, and I'd be 90 years old like him, because I wanted to touch him every time. I would never let him leave out and not touch his hand, because I want some of that to rub off on me, right? So he said, well, they're not going to let me drive, and I'm going to need you to stay in there and take care of your family, and I don't want you to have to worry about nothing. He said, don't you worry about a thing. And his wife was there, Miss Josie, and she said, with Derek, she said, you've done good, and you've always taken care of my husband, and I'm going to make sure he take care of you. I said, yes, ma'am. So I came back to work, and sure enough, his lawyer called me, and we did the paperwork and all of that stuff, and so now I'm here, and I'm going to carry his legacy on, because I'm going to tell you something. This is one of, if not the oldest, barbershop in North Carolina. One of, if not the oldest. Right? So, that day, I felt a sense of commitment, loyalty, you know what I mean? Because I can't let this man down. This is that man's whole life. This man, he never had another job. That's the only thing he's ever done was cut hair. Because that's the only thing his father ever done. You know what I mean? He came from that lineage. And he had one sister, and they both graduated high school early. So he wasn't, you know, inept upstairs. He could have done anything. He chose barbering. And then for me to come, and then our paths to cross like they did, who better to keep it going than myself? You know what I mean? His son never got in the profession. My son don't even want nothing to do with no cutting no hair. And it's ironic because both my girls got profession. They want to cut hair. They want to cut hair. My daughter's an attorney. She want to cut some hair. You know, my daughter designing rides for Disney. She want to cut some hair. My son said, nah, he mess with that stuff. He don't want to do nothing but computers. But Mr. Hope, he taught me so much just by being who he is. And I can imagine that over the years that he's been a barber, he's had plenty of people he could mentor over the years, but way before he even knew who I was. But I don't think it fell on their ears like it fell on my ears. You know what I mean? Because I can dig that kind of stuff. This man got some stories no book would ever give you. You know what I mean? Because he's giving it to you with no remix on it. He's telling you what he know for a fact. This man told me Jimmy Hoffa sent and went to that restaurant. And he don't even, I mean, that man was there. You know what I'm saying? He told me how good of a president FDR was. A lot of people don't even know FDR served 16 years in the White House. Right after that, there was no more terms over two terms. You couldn't do no more than two. Because FDR was so hard to come behind that they limited everybody. This is the story that this man told me. He told me about Hoover. He told me about all of these dudes, like they grew up together. And then, look, let me tell you, when I'm going to use his word, Obama. When Obama got in the chair, he said, yeah, that boy Obama, I bet he ain't going to be no FDR. That's all he would say. He said that the whole first 4 years, Obama was in the chair, right? Because he lived through those first four. He said, Obama, he got a job ahead of him. Yeah, more power to him. He said, they going to tear his ass up. And he didn't even really curse, but he said at that time, Obama, they going to tear his ass up.
And that's how you pronounced Obama.
He said Obama. Yeah. That's what he said, Obama. look, I would laugh just like we doing now, right? Because I understood, but he was close. He had the O right. He had the O. He said, Obama? He said, they going to tear his ass up. I said, well, he might have a shot. He said, well, yeah, he might have a shot. But they going to tear his ass up. And it was just, and he said it. He said, I was just so glad to see somebody of color in the White House. He said, but he still ain't no FDR. I don't know what it is about FDR, but he said it was the greatest president he ever seen. How am I going to argue with that? I wasn't around. When I was born, Jimmy Carter was the president. When I was born. And then I saw Reagan and Bush, then Clinton and Bush, and then Obama. You know what I mean? Them the only presidents I know. And then this other one, 45, you know, and so it's just the story that he told. They were so, like I say, they were candid, but they were so nonchalant to where he was just talking like saying his ABCs. He was saying it because he knew what he was talking about. And there's no way I can dispute what he's saying because I wasn't there. And he talked about, I mean, just it's so much stuff that he shared. And like I said, I don't know if it was to mentor me or to uplift me or to keep me from, but he could tell that I wasn't just no ordinary street dude or nothing like that. I got college education. I got 2 college degrees. I got barber license in multiple states. So he knew who he was talking to. I ain't no dummy. He getting his, because I don't like to even talk to people that I don't feel like is going to get it. And that's part of what he told me. Don't waste your breath on deaf ears. Because if they're not going to use it, you could use that breath on somebody else. You know, and I took that and I learned it. And then, you know, and I'm the type that I would at least give somebody the benefit of the doubt. Because I'll tell somebody in a minute, you can chew the meat and spit the bones out. If I'm saying something to you that's going over your head, let it go over here. Just grab what fits you and then let the rest go. Because then somebody else will catch it in the wind, especially if there's other people around. Somebody in here will catch what I'm saying, even if you don't. That's how I took what he taught me about speaking out of turn or whatever. You know what I mean? Say it anyway. Somebody will get it. And I got it from what he was saying to me. And so, from that point on, when he told me to make sure that I take care of my family, he was never going to come to work no more. That was it. I went to his house every day. I went and took him lunch every day. You know what I mean? I made sure I would go to the Chicken Hut down here. I would go get him a plate. I knew what he liked to eat. I would go get him a plate. I'd buy him a beer. You know what I mean? I'd get him a 24-ounce beer. Something to keep him, you know what I mean? And then his wife had passed away a year before he did. Miss Josie. She passed away a year before he did. So I knew he was lonely. So I would go sit. I would call my wife. Because I don't do nothing without calling my wife. I call my wife, baby, I'm closing the shop. I'm going to go down and I'm going to sit with Mr. Hope. This was every day. He lived a year after she did. You know how that goes. They had been married 78 years. They got married when they was 24. They got married at 24 years old. And they were married for 78 years. They were married for 78 years. She died May of 2015. He died October 2016. He died October 19th, 2016. That was the day he passed. His son called me and said that he was gone. And he died naturally. He died with every tooth he was born with. He died with all his senses. He was just old. He wasn't sick. He wasn't hurting. He went to sleep and woke up dead. Who in the hell don't want to die like that? I know Derek Green do. You hear me, Miss Lisa? Who don't want to die like that?
So I just never heard that phrase before. Woke up dead.
Oh, well, that's me. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's fine. Hey, I appreciate it.
Who don't want to die like that? You go to sleep and wake up, wonder why can't nobody see you? Because you're gone. Then you felt nothing. You can still chew your food. You got all your senses. I can't think of a better way to go. You got some people die up a tree, off bridges, bullet wounds, gunshots, all that. This man went to sleep and woke up dead at 97. He was 97 years old. It don't get no better than that. It don't get no better than that.
He almost lived a whole century.
His father lived to be 98. His mother lived to be 96. His son is 78 right now. And now his father, who Thomas Hope, lived to be 102. His mother lived to be 103. That's their lineage. That's why I touched him every day to see if I can get some of that stuff to rub off on me. You understand, Miss Lisa? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's some longevity genes right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was wondering if I might ask a question.
Sure, absolutely.
You described Mr. Holt as being feisty. Mm-hmm. I was wondering what else comes to mind when you think about how you would describe just who he was as a person.
Who he was as a person?
Yeah, I know you've been talking about it, but what if you can also distill that?
No nonsense. That means if it don't fit his circle, he don't want it there. And it's ironic because I've been that my whole life, even before I even came in his presence, but he confirmed that for me as well. Don't let people in your circle that don't fit. Because you'll know in your spirit, if your spirit is clean, you'll know who fits your circle. And he just didn't. And see, when I say feisty, that's coming from people on the outside. They called him mean, but he wasn't mean. He was feisty. That means if you think he's mean, that means you probably don't need to be in his circle then. And he made sure you knew that. Uh-uh, young man, I ain't cutting your hair. Go next door or go cross it. He would do that, and I do that to this day. Because I ain't going to cut every head. That's what he meant by every dollar ain't a good dollar. Because if your spirit ain't right, I don't want you being in my chair. And then I go home, and now I'm making my wife mad for no reason at all, and she ain't even seen me all day. But all of a sudden, now she mad at me. Now we arguing. That's because of some spirit I had in my chair. He taught me that. That's what I mean by him being feisty, because he just didn't take no mess. If it didn't fit, you can't acquit. Just don't allow it. Right? Okay. So that's what I meant by that. And it was just coming from other people. Man, I remember Mr. Hope. Oh, man, he was mean when I was little, man. These people 60. But you talking about, for them to remember that when they was a kid that this dude didn't play, he hit him. He hit him hard right there in the chest. That dude was mean, man. I remember I used to walk by the Deluxe Barbershop, man, when I was 10. How old are you, man? 59? Man, you, where they worked, didn't it? Man, every time I went in there, I sat down and shut up because I ain't want to have to hear it. That's what he's supposed to do. That's a community servant for you. Because a lot of times we get people drop kids off, and they'll leave and don't know how bad the kids are. But when they come back, yes, ma'am, no, sir, because we ain't going to just cut your hair. You know what I mean? I had a kid bite me in here one day, and the daddy was sitting right there in front of me and thought it was funny. I bit him back. Pulled his pants down, I tapped him 3-4 times on them bare cheek. That little boy's 17 now. Loved me to death. Won't open his mouth, and he bring all his friends with him because I showed him then. He was 5 at the time. Sometimes it's child abuse now. Can't do that no more. You go to jail. But that was years ago, you know what I mean? But see, that's the kind of stuff that we do, you know, in our profession. But he did it from the 40s and the 30s and all the way up, you know what I mean? And like I say, ain't no telling who he's impacted. You know, because I got a lot of people that reminisce about the salon, daycare downstairs that was there with my grandmother and his wife. There's a lot of my classmates and stuff that went to school down there, and they remember coming up, like I say, they would go down there and come up here and get their hair cut. And then go back to their parents, pick them up, and they all say, boy, Mr. Holt didn't play no game. You come up here and he would feed you, he would give you a lunch or something, and cut your hair, tap you on the ass, and send you on back downstairs till your mama come. I mean, that's a lot of people, you know what I mean? A lot of kids probably needed that. A lot of kids don't have fathers. You know, I get so many women that bring their kids to the barbershop now. Where the daddy's at? And I'm sure he's probably seen, I know he has, thousands more than I have, where the fathers wasn't around and women didn't, you know, they had to bring their little boy to the barbershop. That's a father's job, man. Not to being biased or nothing like that, but, you know, When last time you seen a little a dad take a little girl to the salon? That's rare, ain't it? Right. Same thing. It's a doppelganger. It's a double jeopardy, a double standard. You know. But that's who he was.
So I know you mentioned a few times that he was a community servant.
Mm-hmm.
He seems like he definitely looked after people.
Mm-hmm.
He helped form and shape young people.
Right.
If you were to go throughout Durham today, of people who would call themselves Durhamites, native Durhamites.
Right.
What are some other ways in how they might reminisce about who he was or what role he played in the community?
Well, the thing is, with the population of Durham now, a lot of the people that he used to service probably not even here. You know what I mean? Because he had been around since the 30s, 40s, 50s. And a lot of those guys are probably way gone. A lot of these kids, because I'm only 50 years old now, and I was born in 1970. So by 1970, when I came here in 2008, he was already 88 years old. And then I had people that come in here in 1980, and he was 70 in 1980. You know what I'm saying? So a lot of those people are already, you know, wiped off. You know what I mean? And so the thing is, he impacted a lot of people to where a lot of clients, some of the clients I have, they're probably either great-grandchildren or grandchildren of somebody that used to come to him. You know what I mean? Because I may have a 60-year-old man now that come here and say his granddad used to bring him to Mr. Hope. You know what I mean? So he's a third generation Mr. Hope client, and now he's bringing his grandchildren to me. You see the cycle? It's like a snowball effect, and it's generational. You know, we done went through five generations since 1980, and he was already 70 years old at the time. You know what I'm saying? So that's what it is, like that right there. With you know, when you tell me who he's impacting on. Because his impact is generational. It's not just that one person, and that's what I want my legacy to be too. Because I have clients that I've been cutting, like I say, you know, that little same little boy I spanked on his butt, he's 17 now. Now see, he'll have children in a little bit, and then he'll be bringing them. And I do have clients that I used to cut when they was kids, and now they got five or six little boys now. Because I've been cutting here for 12 years, but I've been back in North Carolina for 17 years now, you know what I mean? But I've been cutting since 1989, you know, so, and it comes back around and it's generational. For one, it tells you how old you are because you've been doing it so long. I'm 32 years in now. And so, and then it tells you the longevity and then it tells you your loyalty from your clientele. Because I got clients that will not go anywhere until they come see me. You know what I mean? That's 17, 18-year, you know, clients. And then, now, like I say, they got children, and so I'm sure he's had thousands of them over the years. You know what I mean? Because this is the one job I tell people that we get fired more than anybody on earth, because you can cut a head of hair, and you'll never see that client again. He might just walk through the door, get a haircut, boom, he moved to the moon. You'll never see him again. I just got fired, right? But then you got some people that'll make you a part of their bills every month. Water bill, light bill, haircut, milk, eggs, bread. You see? But it's all customer service. It's all communication. And it's all about me. I try to make this barbershop, as old as it is, I try to make it feel like a living room. Comfortable, come and kick your feet. I got a client come in and go to sleep. Don't even want no haircut. They just want to come and be in the barbershop. It's our country club. You come in, this is the black man's country club, the barbershop. You can come in, sit down. I got some that do construction. They don't even feel like driving all the way. They so tired, they stop and still grab my beer. I need to sit down, man. I need to drink this beer right quick. Can I sit down? Sit in the back, keep your bag on it. Go on, kill it, man. Go on home, kick your feet up, man. It's the country club. This is our country club. This is the barbershop. There's nothing on this earth like a black man's barbershop. I don't know about the other people. I'm sure every barbershop is the same principle, whatever, whatnot. But when you got a barbershop where you can come in, you can get your dentist, you can get your a psychiatrist, you can get your haircut, you can get you something to eat, you can get your, you might, somebody might come through here with a pack of batteries that you might need. All everything in the barbershop. This is a flea market. This is a country club. It's a hospital. It's a, because I might have a nursing. I might have a sheriff in here. I might have, you know, regular police. I mean, you never know what you run into in the barbershop. This is our country club. This is our country club. And Mr. Hope ran the country club like a champ. You gonna do this like this here? We ain't gonna do no profanity. If it's women and children in here, you're going to hold your mouth right. You're going to conduct yourself. Now, when they leave, we'll act their ass. But women and children, you're going to respect them and until they're gone. That's the barbershop. And we can talk about anything in here. We don't bring Jesus in here. We don't do religion. Because we like to keep everybody don't believe in Jesus. Everybody don't believe in Allah. So we keep it amicable, we keep it mutual, we just won't talk about nobody. We're going to talk about the game. And we're going to talk about her. Whoever your her is. Because they're going to do that. Man, that girl, and took her, she done burned all my clothes. That's the barbershop. And then we'll talk, but we had to be careful because they her over there talking about us. I got a salon right next door, they doing the same thing. Her talking about us. You know, but that's how it go. That's matrimony. That's life at its purest form. Everybody can, you can get your service, you can get your pampering, you can get your mind straight, you can get your rocks off, you know what I mean, in terms of getting everything off your heart and everything. And then everybody go home and be happy. A lot of, you can imagine, I had people, some of my clients, for instance, I'm going to give you two scenarios. I have a client come in, get his hair cut. Boom, I tighten him up. He called me an hour later. He said, man, you done made my girl leave me. I said, what I do? How you doing? He said, man, the cut was so tight. He said, we went to Walmart, and all these women kept looking at me, and she left me, and I had to catch the bus home. I said, man, you blame that? He said, dog, man, he said, man. He ain't never come back. I got fired. Because she really loved him behind that. At the same time, it's a dichotomy. Dude said, man, my wife came, I had my daughter for the weekend. We got divorced last year. We got divorced, but I had my daughter, had custody of her this weekend. He said, boy, you need to cut my hair, man. I just married her again this morning. We got remarried behind that haircut. You see what I'm saying? That's the kind of stuff that goes on, Ms. Withers. This is the barbershop. This is our country club. And I'm just thankful and I'm proud that Mr. Hope gave me a chance to keep his legacy going because I try to make sure that everybody know. Do y'all know the history of this shop? I try to make people understand. I got a sign. You get a picture of this sign right there, too. That one up there, you see it up there against, above the door? I keep it going. And the only thing he ever asked me to do was not change the name. When he called me and told me his lawyer wanted to meet me and I signed them papers to take over this, he said, only thing I ask is that you don't change it. I said, Mr. Howard, I would have never done that anyway. I would have never changed the name of it. I know the history of this shop. I would have never done that. Never. Never, 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 never. If I open another one, I'm going to name that one the same thing. Deluxe Barbershop 2.
Did he ever share why he named it that?
At the time, he did say that everything was, see, going back to Black Wall Street and all those days and in the Black Renaissance era and everything, there was a lot of celebrities that used to come through Durham. Mm-hmm. Martin Luther King, James Brown, so forth, so on, et cetera. So he figured, if I can give them a deluxe service, I should be called Deluxe Barbershop. Because that's where James Brown used to get. James Brown sat in this chair right here, Lisa. This chair right here.
The James Brown.
Yeah. Martin Luther King sat in this chair right here. You ever heard of John Hope Franklin?
Never heard
sat in this chair right here. Why you think as soon as he gave me, I came right here? That's why I've never gotten rid of any of these chairs. Who knows who sat in the other ones? I'm telling you, these are the stories he told me. He and John Ho Franklin was like that. John Ho was from Chicago. He would come to Durham at least 3 or 4 times a year, according to Mr. Hope, and he would get, they wouldn't go anywhere else but here. James Brown would, they would perform downtown, because it was a Black Wall Street. Everything downtown Durham, Haytie area, was all Black. The theaters, the hotels and everything was all Black. Martin Luther King would march, Muhammad Ali sat in this chair right here. Take a picture of the chair. I'm telling you, this is all according to him now. I wasn't there. I'm telling you what the man told me, and I believe him. Who gonna claim to be that that's not that? He said, Derek, there's a lot of people been through here, son. Not to mention the spirits that I hear. That's a whole nother interview. Ooh-wee. I'm surprised we ain't heard nothing yet, because I done said his name a million times. Because my water's up to turn on. I'm telling you now.
Okay.
You ain't got to believe me. I don't spook you. No. But, just to answer your question.
So he had a lot of people.
Yeah.
When they came to Durham, they saw him.
From what I understood from a lot of, like I said, the older people that was coming, from what I understand, which was way before my time, the 60s, early 70s, if you were Black and you had a little paper and you was doing well, you was well-to-do, this was the barbershop you came to, because by him, like I said, he always wore a certain tie. That was one of the main reasons why, because it was prestigious. So everybody that came in was either important, they held a high position somewhere, or they were entertainer. Ironically, if you look behind you, you see a lot of sports. I started doing all the football team at Central. Some of the women on the softball, basketball.
So there's a few questions. I think there's really two that have been swirling in my mind.
Go ahead.
One is that you mentioned Mr. Holt will come at 6 in the evening.
Uh-huh.
What did he do the rest of the day?
He would be at home being old.
Was that his, do you know that was his schedule the whole time he's had the shop? He only worked evening hours?
Yep.
So I'm just curious, how did he feel the rest of the day if he only worked from like 6 to 9 in the evening?
He didn't have to work. He had been cut in half for 70 years already. He didn't have to work at all. He was coming just to get out of the house. Okay. Just to feel like he was still doing it.
Okay.
Well, you know what I'm saying?
Was his hours different in, like, decades prior?
Of course. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So he worked all during the day before, but by the time...
How you think you get to be 90 and ain't got to work no more?
Okay.
Well, you got to grind in your 20s, your 30s, your 40s, your 50s, just like I'm still grinding. You got me here on my day off.
I'm sorry.
For free. Because I care about you.
Oh, thank you, sir.
But no, seriously, though. But yeah, he at that point, by the time I got here,
okay.
At that point, he was in his 80s going on 90. He ain't need to work no more anyway. You know what I mean? He didn't have to, he wasn't worried about no money. Trust me, he owned half of Mebane. So he didn't need no money.
So he inherited all that land from his dad?
Right. That's why he bought every house on the street.
Okay.
His dad taught him, if you buy a house, try to acquire the property next door. That way you can control who lives next to you. And so he did that for a whole street. So now the whole is 9 houses on that street, and it's called Holt Street. I live 3 blocks from there. Now his son lives in the house that his father was raised in, and he owns all the houses now because he was the only child.
Okay.
He only had one child, Sterling Holt Jr. Mm-hmm. That's it. Now, he never gotten married, never had any kids, so who better to be here than myself? So his father was like a grandfather to me, and he's like a godfather to me. His son is, because he was like a godfather to my dad, even though his son is older than my dad. My dad is only, 73? And his son is 78. You know what I mean? But he mentored my son, I mean my father, because my father was in the daycare down there with my grandmother, and his son was a little older, so he was already in public school, that type of thing. You know what I mean? And so, yeah. So, and ironically, when I ran into his son, Junior, in the store, he said, "You look familiar to me." I guess because I look like my dad, I guess. And this was in Mebane. You know what I mean? And he said, "Are you from Durham?" I said, "Yeah." And I had my barber school stuff on. I said, "Yeah, I'm from Durham." He said, "Well, my father's got a barber shop and he's getting older. I was wondering, would you mind going in there and meet with him and maybe work with him?" And he asked me my name. He said, "What's your name?" I said, "My name is Derek Green." He said, "Well, who are your parents?" I said, "Well, my father's name is Ricky Austin." He said, "Ricky, your daddy?" Boom, he lit up. Christmas tree. He said, "No, Ricky is not." He said, "Man, me and Ricky grew up like brothers." He said, "I know that." I said, "Yeah, that's my dad." Y'all start. He gave me a key. He said, "Whenever you're ready, go on in there, because my dad ain't there, such, such, such." And I waited a whole year. Mm-hmm. I put the key in, I ain't even think nothing about it. And then it just hit me one day, and I said, "Let me see what's going on," because it was a spirit thing about it to me. And so I called, I said, "Well, I'm going to go by." He said, "Go on by there, my dad should be there about 6 o'clock. Go by there." And I came, I just bust in the door with the key. He was sitting in sleep. Senior, Mr. Holt was sitting in there sleeping. I come through the door. He looked up. I said, "Mr. Holt?" He said, "Yeah, son." He said, "How you get in here?" And I said, "I got a key." "Where you get the key from?" I said, "Your son gave it to me." He said, "Well, who are you?" I said, "Well, I'm Ricky's son." Lit up, Christmas tree. The rest was history. I never left that same day. I never left. The next day I came and brought all my stuff. And I had the shop blowed up. He couldn't believe it. He said, "Lord, I'm messing."
But do you know if he was involved in anything else in the community? I know you mentioned he was a Mason.
Yeah. He did a lot for... His main focus was... And this was huge, too, actually. It wasn't necessarily... Well, I guess indirectly it was the community, but... He did a lot for barbers, period. Get a picture of his plaque up there, too. It's the NMBA, which is the National Master Barbers Association. He started that. I'm not sure what year. But and the purpose of that was because for years, and even still, they tried to make us pay taxes on every haircut, like buying a bag of chips or something like that. Who wants to pay $12.99 for a haircut? You know, it's a cash and carry thing. It's been for 6,000 years. You trade, it's a barter system. I cut your hair, you pay me. See you next time. So the legislature, so the NMBA, which is National Barbers Association, fought legislature, and they raised a bill to keep that from happening. So that was his main contributor. So as a barber, and all the barbers, pretty much statewide, we don't have to worry about that. Now, it's up to each individual barber to do the right and pay their own taxes, get you an accountant, which I have, get you somebody to do your taxes, do your 1099 or your 1040 or whatever, and pay your taxes. Otherwise, we'll be paying $15.99, $17.99 for, that's that super clips. And what's the other one? Great Clips and all that. See, they do that kind of stuff. I see the commercials. They didn't have nobody to fight for them because they don't look like us. He did that for us. Not them, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So essentially, he lobbied the legislature.
Right. And he lobbied with the legislature and all of that. And he fought it. And we won a bunch of times. And so, last I heard of that, I don't even think it's a fight anymore, because they never said anything else about it. You know what I mean? And he had nominated me to get on the treasury for the NMBA, but he passed away before we could finish that process.
The organization's still around?
It's still around. I'm not sure who the... But you know what? I really don't know, because everybody that he was fighting with was as old as he was. And you asked me a good question that time. Them people was old just like him at the time. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Let me see. That was 2012 when he got a plaque for that. And that's been 8 years ago. He's been gone 4 years. So, like I said, those people were in their 80s and 90s that was fighting with him. So I'm not even sure if the fight continues, but until we hear something, we still good to go. We still good to go, you know. And then by me being a barber school instructor myself, the state board will reach out to me if something, anything like that changes or something like that. They'll contact me directly, you know what I mean, because of how my license set up and my email, all that stuff like that. They'll let me know, well, as of now, this is what you got to do and this is what you got to teach to your students, because I can't tell them a lie and then they go out here thinking, you know, they already think they're going to be a millionaire in the first week they graduate barber school. They already think, you know what I mean? Because when you come in there with suit and tie and all that kind of stuff, they think they're going to look like that. No, you got to grind. You got to go get it. You know what I mean? You know, so. But he did teach me the business side of how to handle your stuff, how to get your account, how to do your taxes, how to pay, you know what I mean? He would tell you, you know, pay your taxes. That way when you get older, like me, you'll have something in the pot. If you don't pay your taxes, which, you know, you probably won't get hounded a lot, but if you happen to grow old, like me, and you ain't paying no taxes, and you look up and you 72, but you ain't got but $28 in the bank, you're going to be in bad shape, son. That's all he had to tell me. He had to tell me that two times. You know what I mean? Put your something in the pot now. Because if you can go to the mall and you can go buy you... make you $100 a day and go to the mall and spend 80 of it, what you gonna do? Put that money up, son. Save your all money ain't good money, but the money that you earn and you get, you do the right thing with it and you'll get it back. Because when you pay your dues will pay you back. Those were his most famous words. If you pay your dues will pay you back. If you happen to get old, have something in the pot. Because if you don't, you can't go back young. You can't go work in no warehouse at no 68 years old. Because that'll probably be the only job that's hiring. Mm-hmm. You're not going to go find no job where you go sit down at 68, 70 years old. You're going to have to go work at Burger King somewhere. You're going to have to work like a 16-year-old, and you can't do it. Your body ain't going to let you do it. He had to tell me that no whole lot of time.
So it sounds like he really instilled a lot of lessons.
Yeah.
So he was the founder of a state organization for black barbers, mm-hmm. worked on the behalf of them. Mm-hmm. He was a Mason, a member of the Prince Hall.
Right.
Mason.
Right.
Any other organizations you're aware of? Or
No, that was all I heard him talk about. He didn't even talk about that much. Hmm. I just knew that the founder of the Prince Hall chapter in Durham, what's the name of it? A.S. Hunter. A.S. Hunter Lodge in Durham was his uncle. I do remember him telling me that.
So the name of the lodge is A.S. Hunter.
Right.
Is that also the same name of his uncle? Or?
Yep. Alfonso something. I want to say Sterling. But I'm not sure. But I know A.S. Hunter is the name of it. You know, that's not my lodge where I'm a part of, you know. But A.S. Hunter, he told me that was his uncle. And I know that there's an elementary school named after one of his aunts. I think it's Burton Magnet School or something now. I actually went there in elementary school, first, second, and third grade. But that's named after one of his aunts. And I'm not sure of her first name, but... the school is Burton, B-U-R-T-O-N. Mm-hmm. I do know that was, I think he said that was one of his aunts. It was named from her. His whole family was literary. You know what I mean? They were scholars and all this kind of stuff, you know, from what he told me. I had a bunch of stuff on the wall years ago, but when he passed, mm-hmm. I took it down and I saved it. I got it locked away in my house. And, North Carolina Mutual, life insurance company. That was his family. Yeah, that was his family. Yeah, I'm trying to think of the last name. I can't remember the last name. Kennedy's. Kennedy's was the last name. They were some kin to him in some lineage. It was a whole tree. I had a big calendar. It was about half the size of that window right there. And it had the whole lineage on there. Okay. You know what I mean? So I rolled it up. And a lot of the stuff he had on there, I took it. Now, some of it, you can get pictures. Let me show you some of this so you can help you out. I kept some of the stuff. Like, these are some of his original licenses from the old days. These are some of his original licenses. And then I have some more over here. And then I got plenty of them up here. So I kept a lot of his stuff. But yeah, I got plenty of licenses and all this kind of stuff. And so I kept, this is my son right there. But yeah, so I kept a lot of his stuff in here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I got a picture of what the shop used to look like when it was up there years ago.
So he started the shop when it was further up on Fayetteville.
Mm-hmm.
And then he eventually moved to his current location, right, 1220 Fayetteville.
Okay. Right, exactly. I'm not sure what the address was then because it wasn't a highway there yet, mm-hmm. from what he told me. So, and then the rest of the pictures are pretty much my stuff. You know, I got, he had license from the very day I was born. Because everybody's barber license is due to be paid on my birthday, May 31st, every year. That's my birthday. So he had a license on that day, May 31st, 1970. Definitely got that one at the house, framed. But so I just kept a few of his things up here, and then I started building my own wall. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of these is my people and stuff like that now, so... And that's what he wanted me to do. You know, keep it going and just make it my own. He's, like I say, the only thing he asked me to do is not change the name. He said, make it yours. And once I did a little bit of remodeling and hung some stuff, I went and got him and brought him up here, and I asked for his approval. I said, Mr. Holt, how you feel about what the shop looked like? Because all the walls were like the old school paneling, like old back in the corner back there. So I left that in honor to him. See that old brown wood? I left that. And up, well, yeah, all this wood up here, I left that in tribute to him. But the rest of the walls, I painted them. I started hanging newer stuff up, you know what I mean, and different things like that. And so, like the artwork in the back, see, that's all my daughter's artwork back there. The one at Disney in California, that's all her artwork. When she was 12 years old and on up. Yeah, yeah. Because that's my major. I was an art major, so I knew one of my kids was going to have that, at least. Yeah, so, anyway, yeah, so he was a great dude, man. I'm telling you. I don't think his son meeting me in the store way down in Mevin somewhere, and all, I don't think it was a mistake. And we talk about that a lot. He and I, we still talk about that, how that happened like that, and that's just God. And then when I came and Mr. Holt welcomed me with all his arms and just opened up and just guided me and just told me what to do and what not to trust and how to trust and how to live. And you know what I mean? He said, Derek, he said, you always taking care of your kids and I want you to always be able to. My lawyer going to call you and you sign them papers and you take care of your children. You don't have to worry about nothing. And that took me back to what his wife told me. She said, you've been there, you've been taking care of my husband, I'm going to make sure he take care of you. She was dead a week later. Ms. Joseph, oh, yes, yes, that's a true story. She said, I'm going to make sure he take care of you. And before he died, he told me, he said, you don't have to worry about nothing. He said, just take care of your kids. Mm-hmm. Yep. So now I'm here.
And I thank you for your time.
You're very welcome.
If it's okay, with your last reference to Ms. Holt, that's actually the last question I had. Because you mentioned several times her and the daycare downstairs. So I don't know if there's anything that you may want to share about Mrs. Holt, who she was.
I didn't know her real well, really. Okay. Because by the time I came, she wasn't as mobile as she would have been. You know, she wasn't driving anymore. Her son would come get her, and she would actually get her hair done next door. But that was once every 3 or 4 months or so. Mm-hmm. So I never really got to know her, but she knew who I was through my grand. She knew I was my grandmother's grandson. Mm-hmm. And every time I saw her, it was repetitive. Mm-hmm. Yes. Boy, Miss Virginia. Virginia Austin was my grandmother. She lived to be 93. And I met my dad when I was 23. I didn't know my dad. I mean, you know, he was in the Army and stuff. But anyway, I met her the year she died. She was 93 when she died. So she was like 20 years older than Mrs. Holt. She was already old because I met her in 1993, and she was already 93.
That's Miss Austin.
Right, that's my grandmother. Okay. But Mrs. Holt died in 2015-14, mm-hmm. and she died at like 95. So they were like 25, 30 years apart already in age, you know what I mean? But she knew who I was, you know what I mean? So I landed in the spot created by God, you know? And so the best thing for me to do is keep it going, keep Sterling Hope alive.
There you go.
Because, and then I get a couple of people that come through that are older, and they remember the shop. And some of them have moved out of town years ago, and they're happy to see the shop still thriving. And then they'll come in, they'll see his picture. Man, I quickly said, that's my grandfather. That, you know, that's the quickest way for me to, you know what I mean? That's my grandfather, man. I'm still here keeping it going. And they appreciate that. You know what I mean? They appreciate it, and I appreciate them appreciating it. And then they don't want no cut. They just want to see that, man, this shop, boy, it still look the same. Them the same chairs I grew up. And then that's the rhetoric. And you got to appreciate it, you know what I mean? And I do. And so it's a privilege for me to keep him going in his space, in his chair, with his memories. And I'm going to invite you one day, and I'm going to let you sit there, and we're going to do some EVP sessions. You might hear something on your joint, because I'm into paranormal, and you might hear some stuff, because, you know, your microphones may hear some stuff we don't hear. Got my water turned on, my toilet to flush. Ooh, I'm telling you now, don't let it spook you, but I want an audio too.
Okay.
But you got any more questions?
I'm just checking the time, and I didn't realize how long we've been talking. But I
told you before we started, when I get started, I ain't gonna stop.
But this has been wonderful.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Green, for your time.
You know, you're very welcome, Ms. Withers.
And for sharing everything about the history and the shop of Mr. Hull. I have a newfound appreciation for it, and I thank you.
Okay. I hope you did get a newfound. But see, that's the impact he had on me. You see how he's still impacting?
Mm-hmm.
See, you fascinated by the man that ain't even here no more, and you never even met. See? That's what I want to do.
Yes.
Somewhere in your journeys, I hope you always remember me from that same reason. And it, even still, it'll be through him, because he's the one that brought you here. You think that's by mistake? Exactly. That's why I'm here, because it wasn't by mistake.
Yes, sir.
That's a bad man. If he wasn't him, he'd have been me. You understand me? He's a bad mother. Shut your mouth. If he wasn't him, he'd have been me. So good luck with your project,
you.
Darling.
I'm gonna. Is it okay if I talk to you?
Yeah. All right.
I'm just gonna turn the.